hello, and welcome to the Mac Gamecast episode 48. I'm John Carr as always, and with me today are my co-host Ted and Casper. How you doing, guys?
Yep, doing well today.
Yeah, been sick a little bit, but I'm rebounding, so I'm good.
Nice. So today's a bit of a general episode. We have some topics. There's no like groundbreaking news or necessarily a hot new game, but I believe there's a WWDC announcement. I've got a few small games I want to talk about, like indie games that are Mac support. And then we are probably going to be talking about a couple broader game topics like accessibility in games. And also I had some thoughts on expansion packs or DLC and how sometimes they can either make a game way better or in some cases actually make them way worse, which is, you know, curious. And I have some examples on both ends that I've played. And I just, you know, it was just on my mind, so I wanted to chat about it a little bit, and that's mostly it for the day. We'll see what else might crop up, but that's the current plans for this episode 48, creeping towards number 50, which is fun.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
We do have some episode 50 plans. We'll see if they come to fruition, but maybe a special guest interview or something like that. Yeah, Casper, would you regale us with the any and all WWDC notes or news?
Yeah, so it's not like we have some super concrete things, but we do know for a fact now that WWDC has been announced officially. I don't think it was last time we talked, but it's announced for, I believe, June 10th. And like, there's a lot of speculation happening around what's going to happen, of course. People are talking about more AI features coming to the operating systems, macOS, iOS, all that jazz. And then, of course, in relation to that, people start talking about AI hardware being more and more integrated into the Apple chips. Of course, we already have the neural engine, but people are imagining major expansions upon that for the M4 series and the A18 series on the iPhone side. Some people are talking about like that it might already be time to show off an M4 series of chips at DubDub, which I'm suspicious of that because we haven't even had the M3 Ultra or anything yet. So yeah. I think it would be really weird to have an M4 chip coincide with the M3 Ultra. But then some people are like, well, we're skipping the M3 Ultra and going straight to M4 Ultra. And I also think that's weird, like launching M4 and M4 Ultra at the same time. And yeah, I don't know. I don't really buy into that, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, they could do it. It would also break their current pattern, which is, as you described, the Ultra, the Max, or whatever. And then the next number iteration, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. So I would place my bets on the current formula because Apple is, they're both innovative and formulaic. They innovate and then they get formulaic for a while. So that seems to be their thing. So I would bet on that.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I'm betting on us seeing like the Mac Studio and possibly like the Mac Pro refresh at DubDub with just M3 Ultras and that's it. And then we'll have to wait, you know, almost half a year for the M4s to start rolling out in the base models.
Yeah, I imagine so. I was just thinking, you know, can we hope or expect for any, like, games to be showed off? I mean, new ones? I don't know, questionable, unless, like, some Japanese developer or whatever has something in the pipe. I mean, we know they do, like, Hideo Kojima's promised Death Stranding 2. Death Stranding, not Dev Stranding. You know, but that's still like I think years off from release, so I doubt we'll see anything on that.
And I don't think we'd see anything like first reveal at a Mac event for that sort of thing. Like even if
probably not.
Hideo is like, I'm a big Mac fan, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, he probably isn't in control of that. It's probably some publisher, unless he's independent now. I kind of forget what's going on there. He used to be with Konami, I thought, but then
they had a big fight and split up.
But anyway, and, you know, usually it's revealed somewhere else at like a big game show or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Generally speaking. You know, but we'll probably we'll probably see, you know, already well-known games, maybe a couple video or screenshots of them, like Baldur's Gate or Lies of P or whatever, like some relatively recent, you know, higher-end Mac games, you know, which is cool. Speaking of that, Casper, you had mentioned there was some, Apple was promoting games a bit more in the App Store, was that correct?
Yeah, I've seen like a couple of times now that the front page article or whatever you call the promotion things on the Mac App Store be like a big roundup of big games on the Mac. And, you know, one time it was sales. I talked about that last time we had a show. They were doing that at that time. But then since then, they've also just done a big, here's a bunch of cool games. And, you know, because of the nature of games on Mac, and especially the Mac App Store, a lot of those games were the same ones as last time. But, you know, they've been promoting them several times with independent articles, writing about all the games, promoting them. It seems like they're putting a lot more effort into promoting games on the Mac App Store, and especially like the bigger, I would call proper games, than they have done in the past, where, you know, they might show off a Civilization or the old Star Wars Jedi Academy or something every once in a while, but mostly just like, you know, nothing. And yeah, of course, the Mac App Store itself is still what it is, but
is, but it's a step in the right direction, because whenever I open the App Store for the last 10 plus years or whatever, it's usually what I would consider practically a mobile level game or similar level, like featured everywhere. And I'm like, come on, I'm not playing this stuff.
Yeah. You
know? Sorry. Give me something else, you know?
Yeah.
So it is nice to see. It is nice.
Are there any rumors that you heard, Casper, about like improvements or enhancements to the gaming toolkit stuff?
Nothing explicit. No.
Okay.
There's been like little things happening here and there in the very hidden parts of the Apple developer ecosystem, where they released like optimization guides for the Apple Silicon CPUs for like really low level optimization stuff that, you know, if I think it's more targeted towards compiler engineers, honestly, like the people making the things that turn your high level code into actual machine code to optimize better. But you could make, like, I don't know. I think game development has gone beyond that point of this stage where they don't really do this anymore. But back in the day, they would sometimes hand optimize assembly code and stuff. I don't really think that happens anymore. But if it did, then that could be useful. But no, I've not heard anything about the game specific development toolkits for a while. But WWDC would be the thing, the place where that would happen generally anyway. So maybe there.
Right.
This was just one of those things. It's been pretty quiet on that front for a while.
It has. There was a few things happening right when the M3 generation of chips first started rolling out, where we got a few things that were specific to that generation of chips with the dynamic caching capabilities and the ray tracing stuff, where there were some updates, but it's been quiet since then, pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, actually, that's not entirely true. macOS 14.4.1 fixed a fairly big bug in Metal. It flew under the radar a little bit, but there was a bug in Metal that would prevent you from allocating more than 4 gigabyte of GPU memory in one go. That seems like it's been fixed. So that's something, but it's more like a bug fix than anything, you know, new tooling.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, once again in my head, like the game porting toolkit on GPT. It's not necessarily technically anyone can download, use it, and run a game, but it's not that's not necessarily who it's meant to be aimed at. Nonetheless, I wonder, I'm just always a little suspicious of Apple, as much as I am hopeful as well. Like, you know, because you already, much like you can with Crossover or Parallels or Boot Camping or whatever, like, on one hand, I would hope this incentivizes developers or Apple themselves to port more games to the Mac. But on the other hand, we've had this argument before, a debate or whatever, will it disincentivize them? Because technically you can grab this toolkit and run Cyberpunk or whatever the heck you want to play on it at the same time. So I'm like, I don't know. We have to see. I guess time will tell more than anything.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's any way around the fact that Apple's just gonna have to, you know, pay some developers to get the ball rolling, at least for the bigger titles. Yeah. And if they do that, then it doesn't matter if there's a different way to do it, because the developers are getting the money from Apple, so they're gonna do it, right?
That's true.
If Apple's not willing to do that, then of course it's a different story, and I don't really know where that's going to lead us. But as long as Apple is willing to fund the major games coming to the Mac, then the ball will be rolling, and and hopefully that'll spiral and get us somewhere good.
It's not necessarily exciting in terms of a title. A little birdie told me a studio was considering porting Crysis to the Mac. Of course, it's a very old game, but they have remastered, I think, all of them in the last year or two or whatever. Mm. But last I heard, the project fell through. It started and then, or started as in, like, it was maybe being negotiated. And then it got pulled for maybe it was technical reasons or some other reason. I was a little unclear. I couldn't quite get that detail.
That could be funny, though, just from the like ancient meme of Canada on Crysis. And we could finally go like, yes, the Mac can run Crysis. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, just the fact that we don't have that many, you know, shooters. But yeah.
No, it's a good game. It's not my favorite shooter, but it's actually like it's pretty fun. You know, I played through it back in the day on Windows, of course. But, you know, like, it's not incredible these days, but I still think it's quite unique, and we don't really have anything quite like it in the Mac shooter library, at least these days. So it would be welcome, but, you know, currently it seems like it didn't go forward. To be fair, these are the same guys who also wanted to do... I'm not going to name names, though I do know who they are. They also wanted to do Cyberpunk, last I heard. This was, like, at launch, though, and then, of course... Even though it sold like 10 million copies, it also like sort of tanked weirdly. And I think they were seeking funding from Apple to do it. This was like back in 2020 or whatever. So, and that never happened, obviously.
Right.
So I was unclear on this one if they were doing it themselves or also trying to seek funding from Apple. I couldn't get those details. So people are, the point I'm bringing this up is not just to be like, haha, I heard something. My point is people are trying. Even though we don't, in this particular case, these guys don't seem to be succeeding because they're a smaller group, but they're trying, and they're trying to bring games to the Mac. They have brought other games to the Mac. I'm going to avoid naming names because I shouldn't. So, or they've helped port them. So it's not like they're incompetent or whatever. They can do the job.
Right, but it's almost like a bad sign at that stage, isn't it? That it's not succeeding for them to get funding from Apple or whatever, if that's the case.
Yes, so it is. It is a little curious. I just know they're more small time, so I don't know if it's just Apple doesn't care or thinks they're not up to the task, or they themselves only have so much funding and then they need more. You know, I'm sure it can go multiple ways. I know back when I did do journalism, you either had to pay for the license for a game, like, which could be very expensive in the case of, say, Aspyr with Call of Duty, which is why they never had the latest one.
Yeah.
Because the license was, like, hideously expensive from Activision. That's why we always got, like, 3-4 generations back from Aspyr. Or in rare cases, the company themselves would go and hire a third-party studio like Feral, Aspyr, and what have you, Transgaming or whatever. You know, or there was, I forget his name. The guy was supposed to like work on Unreal 3 and Gears of War for the Mac and stuff. He's like a solo coder, but he freelance or whatever. I forget his name. He's also supposed to work on Shadow Warrior 2. All these games that like never actually came to the Mac, but were supposed to. If I recall, it was also Mass Effect 2, all kinds of stuff. They get hired to do it. So it can go both ways. So I'm unclear. As far as I know, in this case, it was these guys approaching Apple and or a company like CD Projekt Red, or who even makes Crysis? It's Crytek, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So, you know, maybe, I mean, a game like Crysis is really old. I doubt it would be that expensive to license, but I don't know. Some companies are also unreasonable, so.
Yeah, it depends. Like, if they're sitting on that IP thinking we're going to do something with it, they might still be very protective of the license of the older games.
Exactly. Or if they're, maybe the recent remaster is expensive, or.
Yeah.
As far as I know, once again, technically, I believe they all run through, like, crossover, like, pretty well. So, like, is there maybe not a great, you know, it's like all this stuff is kind of swirling in my head in the background. Like, obviously, some of it's speculation, some of it's hearsay, some of it's I have a few facts to work with based on past experiences or someone telling me something who actually does know it. But, it's just interesting. Hopefully, that just, everything, once again, I'm not saying this to be pessimistic. It's just like, I'm so eager for it. I wish there was more momentum.
Yeah.
So it is. Oh, it is very slow. Yeah. It is still in the right direction, but it's just. It's like the tortoise and the hare. Like it'd be the hare, but it's the tortoise right now. That's all.
Yeah. That, you know, you make a good point. I don't even know if you realized that yeah, anybody who's a real gamer, like most of us here, if there was a game that came out that we're really interested in, we would find a way to play it, right? When I was years ago, when I was working and I had absolutely no time, you know, for playing games, it was okay for me to wait for something to come around to the Mac eventually. But now I'm not doing that. And it's like, oh, if there's a game, I want to go get it, you know, if it catches my attention.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to be good for the incentive of the companies, like, you know, it kind of like what you implied there, John, is that maybe they gave up because everybody who they thought was a potential market was already doing it with Crossover or, you know, the day gaming toolkit or the combination of both, or an alternate means like, you know, boot camp or something like that. I mean,
right.
Yeah, that's something that's going to be a hard pressure into getting gaming companies into the Mac, unless they can do it like Baldur's Gate, where they come in at the same time, you know, which would be the ideal.
Point. It's a great point. I don't see, you know, if I was a non-Mac publisher, developer, and people are trying to sell me on that, there's more factors than, like, you're not first to market the way you are with PC or console.
Right.
You know, and even then, obviously a lot of people do own PCs and consoles, but broadly, they usually only buy it on one or the other, not both. Though some people do, if there's no cross-platform multiplayer or something. I've heard, I know there's some people who do that. Like, I'm playing it with, like, one guy over here on my PC and, like, two other guys on the Xbox, but it doesn't link up, so I had to buy two copies in separate progress or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not the most common thing. Yeah, so what my, as Ted was just saying, there's essentially no competition. The competition is the genre you're putting your game out into. You're competing with other titles.
Hmm.
Yeah, and arguably coming to Mac late, you're competing with, as Ted pointed out, potentially a bunch of people who have already played the game otherwise. So it's definitely a thing. I'm definitely, if you want to say, quote unquote, guilty of that in many cases.
Me too.
Part of my issue with that is, like, it's not that I mind waiting, though sometimes I'm like, I just want to play this game right now. It's that, unlike one, and again, I know we've talked about this in part before on the show long ago, but the PC and console market get their announcements, like, on average, like years before it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
1-2 years or at least 6 months, like, this is coming. Occasionally they surprise release something, but it's incredibly rare.
Mm-hmm.
There was like that rhythm based action game, music game, I forget what it was called, or like just surprise dropped, nobody even knew it was coming, and it became reasonably popular. Not a Mac game, I forget what it was called, but anyway, but the Mac stuff, it just shows up. They used to do announcements, even like Feral and Aspyre, but then it bit them in the ass. With Feral, it was Fable. They announced it, and then it took them like 2.5 years to port it or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And after that, they like stopped doing announcements.
Like, on that front as well, like when Stray came out, you know, the You're a Cat game. My girlfriend and I, we played it on boot camp on my iMac, and there was no announcement that was going to come to the Mac. If they had said, you know, that'll be native on the Mac in 6 months, we might have just waited to not have to deal with the bootcamp thing.
Right.
But there was no announcement, so we just played it through bootcamp because we already could do that. And like, it's not like, obviously, if you had Apple Silicon, that wouldn't be the case. But then the Crossover could play it. There was some visual artifacting that got fixed, all that jazz. But like, the visual artifacting got fixed a few months or something before it came out natively to Mac, but no one knew it was coming to Mac. So people were just like, ah, I can play it. It runs half of the speed it's gonna later, but no one knew that. So they just played it that way, right? Yeah,
that's a good point. Real good.
Having some knowledge about what's coming might actually help sales here.
Yeah, I understand some of the Mac guys are hesitant to put a date on it, mm-hmm. but I don't even necessarily need them to put a date on it. Just announce that you're working on it.
Yeah.
And chances are we have enough games in our backlog or whatever, or other new games we could play. We're like, you know what? We're going to play it later. Or even if it's a multiplayer game and you want to play with some other friends, maybe you can arrange, hey, can we play this in a couple months, guys, or whatever. Some people will agree or not, but especially single player games, very easy. Like, yeah, I got 10 others I could play. I'll just wait for this one to come out on the Mac.
Sure.
There's definitely a lot of games I would have waited to play on Mac if I knew they were coming, instead of just going to my library in Steam and there's like the news feed and suddenly it's like, ding, Maxibor. I'm like, what? Cool. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. And I'm either halfway through the game or I finished the game or whatever. And I'm like, well, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, cool.
Yeah. Then comes the hard decision of figuring out how to move the save game file from one platform to the other, which I've done a handful of times.
Yeah.
I mean, fortunately, like these days with Steam Cloud, a lot of the time that just works. You know,
seems
you
don't like have to everyone I tried never worked.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But yeah, it's in theory, it's supposed to, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've noticed, you know, a couple of times, ah, oh, darn, I got to move it again. But anyway.
Yeah, okay. Way back. Sorry. For those not on video, aka listening, I just drank some coffee and choked. way back in like 2010-11 or so, because I was doing videos back then, some of my more popular videos were how to transfer save game files for Dead Island, for example, like PC to Mac, like how to port over your character, and a couple other games, I forget which, but I made little, you know, 1 or 2 minute videos, like tutorials how to do it, and it's actually quite easy if you know where to look and where to put it, but sometimes there's some shenanigans involved with like changing numbers or folder names or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. I used to tinker around with that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I want my, I'm halfway through this game. I want my character. I don't want to start over, you know, copy, but
yeah,
boot it up and yay. Hopefully it doesn't get corrupted. That happened to me before. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Yeah, never just move, always copy.
That's right. Exactly. Backup 101. Ted, speaking of games, may not be a Mac game, but you had said Amazon was making a new MMO or game or something.
I don't know how much I'm legally able to say because they told me I couldn't say anything. But
okay.
I mean, it was one of those things. It was, oh, you can't share any information about this. Well, anyhow.
NDA, all right.
Yeah, it's an MMO. It's Korean-based, genre. So it's kind of a anime type of a thing, or maybe like in the genre of like, what is it? Final Fantasy, number it was. Yeah. Something along those lines. A little bit different, obviously. Every game's a little bit different. There's a couple. Ultimately, my experience with it is it was well done. I played for several hours, but it's not the type of MMO that I would stay with. Like, I've never played Final Fantasy because I don't, or the anime type games. I just don't enjoy something about it. And I can't put it into words, but it's a personal thing. It has nothing to do with the quality of the game or how well it functions or anything like that. And as far as that goes, it worked great, So they released it and then we got a chance to play it for like about a week. And, it was good. And it, I thought maybe they were going to be transitioning people away from New World, which is their, currently, I assume popular. I don't know. I enjoy it. but it's not the same type of game. It's an MMO. It's a group of people. There's a bunch of, end game activities, just like a typical MMO. And then there's, leveling up, leveling your character through, which is typical again of an MMO. So, that being said, I mean, nothing specific about the game other than it was interesting, unique, and I don't think it has any problems. It was a closed beta test, but I think it was ready to roll, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it out in the market relatively soon.
So. I'm interested, is it developed by Amazon directly or just published by them? Do you know that?
The game was actually, from what I heard, and the game was already released in Korea, and I think they're just picking it up and publishing it on a broader market. Yeah.
That's what I figured. So, I've noticed, at least judging by some gaming news, the like Korean Japanese stuff, it's been popular for a while, but it seems to be heating up in the Western markets. Like, it's becoming more and more popular than it already was.
Yeah, right.
I'm noticing that trend.
Yeah. So that's probably as much as I can say about it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I do watch anime sometimes. I don't usually play anime games, mostly because of the style. Probably the only one I really enjoyed, and this is going way back, is Oni from Bungie.
Oh yeah, Oni. Yeah, that was actually. Yeah, I enjoyed that one too.
That's like one of my favorite games of all time. I played through it 3 or 4 times easily, including going like and downloading weird patches to run it on like later versions of Mac and whatever. Yeah. And I wish they would just make an update. Just do a Oni remake or Oni HD or whatever the heck. Like,
yeah,
the game's really good. In my opinion, anyway. So
yeah, it was good. Yeah, but again, yeah, it's same thing. It's not my style. So especially for an MMO, you know. So.
Fair. Real quick before we hop into some main chatter, a little, I just want to shout out. Casper has a game to shout out too. A little indie game called, if I'm not mistaken, Slice and Dice. Let me look at my library. I think I mentioned it in chat. It's Slice and Dice. It's like a $10 game, so really easy. You know, nothing expensive. It also has a demo. Actually, it's a $9 game, $8.99 USD. It also has a great demo, which is pretty long. So the idea is, it's like a, I guess you could call it like a, it's in one sense hard to describe. Basically, it's like a top-down view. There's a battlefield. You have enemies and your characters on left and right sides. But all your characters are dice, which is hence the name Dice. Slice and Dice, because it's like a, you know, fantasy RPG type thing.
Right.
And you just play through a series of levels. I think 20 is the default, and they get progressively harder each time. And between each level, you get like an item or character upgrade. And you can, getting an item modifies the character's dice. You know, you could give them extra hits or maybe a brand new ability. So you get to roll your dice, like the level loads, your dice roll. Then you get 2 rerolls, but you can lock in any dice you want. Like, oh, I want, you know, this damage or this thing. So it's very simple but fun, and it's like, I don't want to call it a puzzle, but it's basically a combat puzzle. You're like, what, you know, what do I need to, you know, do I need defense here? Should I do an all defense round or all attack or snipe this important enemy in the back line or whatever? And there's all kinds of stuff to unlock as you play. New classes show up and different enemies and different, you can play a shorter run or whatever. Anyway, I played the demo, loved it, bought it for whatever, $8-$9, and I mean, I only have like 90 minutes playtime into it, but I found it really easy to play. Like, it requires a little thinking, but it's not like some brain burner. Like, honestly, I just played it in bed with my, like, on my, like, laying down in my bed with my laptop in front of me. Just like, it's easy to play with the trackpad. Although, it's honestly slightly annoying because you have to right click on stuff a lot, but, you know, it's an easy game. I figured I can play it when I don't really want to get into a big game like Baldur's Gate or Cyberpunk. Or if I just want to chill for a few minutes, or heck, even if I'm traveling on a plane or something, I'm like, this seems to be kind of the game for me. I like the theme.
Nice.
It's, you know, simple, indie dev, you know. There's no real story. You're just adventurer. You're just immediately thrown in here. You're like adventurer dudes fighting the monsters. There's like nothing complicated about it. But I love board games, and it feels kind of board gamey with the dice rolls. You know, so it's cool. That's my shadow. I've been playing that lately. And yeah,
nice.
Mac demo as well, which is nice. They don't always have a Mac demo, which I always find weird.
Yes, I hate that.
Yeah, so Mac demo and full Mac support and Linux. I think it's all 3. So yeah,
nice.
That's my game, Slice and Dice. I don't know. Is it, who's making it? Over? Oh, who's the person who made it? Developer and publisher is Tann, T-A-N-N. No idea who they are. It's the only, it's the first thing they've made. Anyway, it was released March 20th, so exactly a month ago. So fairly new game, and that's what I've been up to. And it's also rated overwhelmingly positive by almost 1,000 people or whatever. So people are liking it. Yeah, that's cool. My shout out.
Nice. Yeah, I'll also quickly mention a game. The game I'm mentioning, sadly, doesn't actually have Mac support. But the 2 prior games by the studio do have Mac support, so I maybe will get Mac support one day. I don't know. They might also just have gone, this isn't working. We're just getting no sales. It's not worth it. Hopefully not, but we'll see. But yeah, it's called Open Roads. It's by Fulbright Studio. They made Tacoma and they made Gone Home. I think I've mentioned both on the podcast before. I've at least mentioned Gone Home. Very the fantastic game, I think. I've not tried Open Roads yet myself. It's on my to-play and wishlist, but the voice acting is phenomenal, and they have voice actors who have been like in Uncharted 4. They have someone from, what's it called, like Skywalker, Rise of the Skywalker, like a Star Wars thing. as part of the cast. The visual style is completely new to what they've done with both Gone Home and Tacoma, but it looked cool. And yeah, it's something that I've been at least looking forward to since they showed it off first time. Very narrative focused and cool aesthetics. Was hoping it would come to Mac since there are prior games to it, but yeah, maybe later. That's it.
Yeah, big fan of the previous games myself. Remember playing through Gone Home pretty vividly because I wasn't sure what to expect.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if I'd like it, and then ended up being very impressed by it. And,
yeah.
Yeah, later went through Tacoma, which I liked slightly in odd ways. I liked the theme more, but the story slightly less. It wasn't quite as, like, emotional or gut-wrenching or whatever.
But like, what I sort of agree, but at the same time, I think Tacoma had both more, like, significantly more interesting gameplay mechanics because, you were actually, not to put down Gone Home, but you were actually doing things in Tacoma, where Gone Home was more just something happened here, walk around and figure it out, right?
It was walk around house, pick up object simulator, essentially.
Yeah. And Tacoma, it's not like you did a lot. It was still, the story has already unfolded. You're discovering it, but you were discovering it through puzzles more and engaging with it.
It was more of a game, and it was about twice as long, which probably felt better on your wallet, like for paying. I think it was $20-odd.
Something like that, yeah.
Gone Home could be done in like 2 hours, so.
I also think Tacoma had significantly better visuals. Like, Gone Home wasn't a bad-looking game or anything, but it was very, very simple, and it was just a house, right?
Yeah.
Tacoma did a lot of cool things with lighting of the space station you were on, and you were floating around zero gravity and stuff. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it was very, very good. Very good game. Yeah, I did go, once Casper mentioned it in the chat, I went to the Steam discussions and made a thread. Mac support? Like, hey guys, love the previous game. Mac support, played it on Mac. Any chance? This is coming to Mac, thanks.
Nice.
I didn't get a response yet, I don't think, anyway. But, just throwing it out there because it can't hurt, right?
Like, all right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to voice the desire.
Yeah. So, we'll see. But yeah, it does look like a cool game, the kind of game I would play as well. Yeah, we're not going to necessarily go on for too much longer, but wanted to move on to a main topic a little bit. Two main topics, really. But I think we should tackle yours first, Casper, because I think it's actually arguably more interesting, or at least more relevant, which was accessibility in gaming. And I think both you and Ted had some things to say about that.
Yeah, so from my side, it sort of came up as a topic idea because I'm still playing Pathfinder. I've been playing Pathfinder Kingmaker for over 440 hours now, and I'm still only level 14. And apparently the game goes until you're level 20. So, holy Christ, a big game, but it remains fun even like this many hours, and it's incredible. Anyway, tangent. The reason I was thinking of it was because I have poor eyesight. I have good enough eyesight that I can do pretty much everything, but it still means that reading long bits of text, and this game is very heavy on text, can be a bit tiring at times. But it's fine, I can read it with my eyes. But because of basically built-in macOS features, the game, without needing to do anything special, gets both macOS's ability to zoom in anywhere on the screen and just enlarge anything, and the ability for macOS to recognize text and read it out loud for you, which I've started using fairly recently in Pathfinder just to, alleviate my tiring eyes after with very long bits of text. Now, you do kind of need to do some little hacky thing to do this, because you take a screenshot of the area of text you're interested in, then it pops up in the bottom right corner and you hit that, and then you can hit the keyboard shortcut to just read this bit of text. The game isn't fast-paced or anything. I've set it to turn-based. You have static dialogue where you just pick something. So doing this, once you get into the rhythm of it, is pretty fast and fluid, and the macOS just reads things for me.
Cool.
And that's a very, from the game developer's perspective, that's a free way of getting accessibility support for, you can play this with very poor eyesight at this stage. I can read everything with my eyes, but you don't even really need to be able to play this game now. They also have the actual things that they've built into the game, where if you hold a keyboard or a button on the keyboard, then the things that you can interact with get highlighted and stuff like that, where the developers have actually done something that makes it more accessible. And I think that that combination of like system provided features as well as the developers going the extra mile, opening the door to more people to enjoy the game, whether they like explicitly need it or just makes it a more pleasant experience, I find that really cool. And I find more and more games do put in a little bit more effort to provide some features or options for people who might benefit from them. And yeah, I think it's cool as well how, you know, even if you don't need these features, like sometimes they can just make it more pleasant. Like a situation where someone doesn't need it is my girlfriend has perfect eyesight pretty much within, you know, reasonable levels where she hasn't actually been tested for it, right? Because it's good enough. She uses her Switch to play games a lot. And before we moved in together, she had a fairly small monitor, but sometimes she would lie in bed and play from afar, but still plugged into that. And with some games that are pretty small text, it could be hard to read from afar. But the Switch also has a built-in zoom feature, so she could enlarge the text and read it from afar as well.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. You had also mentioned in the chat something about like phobias. I can't. Like, do you have like a game example that might?
So I find it's pretty much always like an arachnophobia filter, and I'm terrified of spiders, so it's great for me. But I don't really know if they do it for other kind of phobias. But games like is it called Deep Rock Galactic or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
That one has an arachnophobia mode.
I didn't know.
Or maybe that was a mod actually. It either has a built-in or has a mod. I actually can't remember now.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, I've seen it in a few games, but I can only really think of that one right now, but I've definitely seen it in a few
it's
others.
Definitely, I think, given game settings, spiders are a pretty common enemy of all types. Even if it's a futuristic or sci-fi game, they have like some cyborg spider So... fantasy or future or whatever, there's usually a spider enemy somewhere in the game. It's pretty dang common.
There was also at some point, again, I can't remember if this was like built-in or a mod, but a thing like this for Minecraft. But the thing is, with the Minecraft one, they didn't replace it with a different enemy model or a different enemy skin or anything. A lot of games will do that where they replace it with something that has the exact same dimensions and hit points and all that, so it's mechanically the same but looks different. The Minecraft thing, they just put like a big purple square over where the spider was, which to me was more terrifying because it's like, I know you're hiding a spider under there and I can hear it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That's like the low effort
Low effort. Yeah.
That's funny. I'm close to arachnophobic. Especially in first-person games, because you're like, woo, really zoomed in. At least if I'm like, you know, Diablo or whatever the heck, Fallout or something. It's not like something zoomed out. Old Fallouts, not the new ones. Wasteland 3, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, they're over there, but A, it's turn-based, so they're not like running around. And B, it's like they're pretty far away. First-person games, real-time, they're in your face. I'm just like, oh my god. Like playing through Metro Exodus, which is on the Mac at this point. There is a point, it's not really a spoiler, you go into like some deep dark tunnels and there's no light, so everything's in like your filtered black and whitey greeny night vision, and the place is filled with big ass spiders.
And I was just like
get me out of this damn part of this game. So it wasn't enough to make me stop playing, but like I pulled out all like my biggest guns and would just like way overkill them, like I wanted them all to die in one hit, like just kill them as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Throw grenades at him, like that was probably about an hour of the game or something. So
oh Christ,
wasn't the worst, but
maybe no, I would be worse. Terrified for an entire hour like that.
I didn't explore anything because the game rewards exploration. There's always stuff. I just like sprinted everywhere, like pull the lever, do the thing, hit the get this. I would appreciate that. For sure. It's funny how that works. Accessibility is important. I do see more of a push. You know, I don't have any particular accessibility features I need through hearing or vision or hands or whatever, but I do see more and more developers either updating it to add accessibility or just mentioning it. It's just becoming more common, and that's a good thing, because even if it's the less, like the average gamer probably doesn't need it, there's gamers who do need it, and they may not be able to play a game because of XYZ things. So if it's there and they could play it, then awesome. Like, that should be the case.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to add, you know, coming from the perspective of an older person, it's, you know, it's not a major thing, but things like, you know, not being able to hear some of the voiceovers sometimes. I mean, I have a little bit of a problem with that, especially if there's background noise or something going on. If I put up like the text that come, you know, that shows up on the screen, like I would do on a movie or something.
It actually
helps out a lot because you pick up a lot more of the story and, you know, which I think is good. And also, you know, if there's a clue in that, you might miss it. And it's like, okay, what do I do now? I couldn't understand what he just told me, or I didn't get it all, you know, and how to, you know, but if you see it on text or something like that, or, you know, or the, you know, some of the visual stuff that, yeah, those things are good. I mean, I think there's a growing number, or it's just a bunch of people who played games are getting older.
both, perhaps.
So a little bit of both, and you know, so there's people out there who can use the, you know, let's increase the font size, you know, so we can see stuff and not have to go, what was that?
So. Occasionally, I've also found games that just have poor audio mixing.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Like it's imbalanced. The music's too loud. The voice is too low, or the environmental noise, which may be cool, but like during, as Ted was saying, a critical cutscene or interaction or whatever, it's like I can't hear a darn thing. And even if you go into the settings, it's like, wait, I can't adjust it properly. And you're like, where are the subtitles or whatever? You know.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So
I've even seen that in like some AAA games. Not like, oh, it's some indie person who doesn't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's actually a bit of a problem in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Was an enormous mega multi-million, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to develop game. Mm-hmm. And the sound mixing, it's like there's a lot of complaints about it. The sound mixing's, it's just off and you notice it. It's mm-hmm. unbalanced and there's no way to adjust it. So it's like, anyway, kind of annoying.
Yeah, I mean, in general, it's like the more settings you can cram into a game, the better, because there's someone who's going to benefit from it, right? Whether you're able to lower more graphic settings so it can run on more machines, or you're able to change the sound mixing or add accessibility features, whatever you allow people to modify, often that's a better thing. Of course, you know, there's some things where it's just creative control. You want to be able to force something to happen a certain way, and maybe spiders are an absolutely crucial part of your spider game, so don't add an arachnophobia mode, and don't bet on arachnophobic people playing it probably, but you know, not everything needs to be for everyone, but it's cool when more people can enjoy something.
Agreed. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I think something I was gonna say earlier about the macOS thing, I think the fact that macOS provides a lot of these things out of the box so the game developer doesn't have to integrate it, but you have things like the zoom and the text reading and colorblind filters and all that baked into the operating system, is a great incentive for game developers to port to the Mac as well. Like I say great, it's not like it's a huge deal, of course, because the market share of accessibility requiring people is not that high, of course, but it's still something where the experience can be more pleasant for some people playing natively on macOS than through some other service because of that. And that's at least some incentive, right?
Sure.
Well, I find the voice one super interesting because it kind of gives your game voice narration.
Yes.
Where it otherwise, you know, usually doesn't, because it's very expensive to hire all kinds of actors and long, long games. So yeah, that's actually, to me, that's like the most interesting one, because I'm annoyed after playing games with full voice narration, like the later updated Divinity Original Sin. This is all Larian, like one in Divinity Original Sin 1 didn't launch with any voice narration other than like cutscenes, like movie-ish cutscenes or whatever. Like intro narration, that was it. Then the enhanced edition, everything was voice acted. It was like, oh my goodness. And of course, I think Original Sin 2, I think, was all voice acted. And of course, Baldur's Gate 3 is like, everything's voice acted. Mm-hmm. It does that a lot. It does make the game take longer because you're sitting there listening rather than reading. But I played a few games like, not a Mac game, but it's a Warhammer game, Warhammer 40K, what is it? Demon Gate, I think. You know, these knights versus demons or whatever. And they do this weird thing where the character will speak like two lines of their dialogue and then stop.
Oh.
But then there's for like a paragraph to read. So you're expecting them to keep talking, but they don't. So you're like staring at them on the screen. You're like, oh, they stopped talking. I guess I have to read the rest now. It's like, I wish you would either do all of it or none of it, because it's jarring.
Yeah, there's a weird middle ground there.
It's a very weird middle ground. It's like janky. I I didn't like it. I love the game. I'm a big fan of the game, but that has always annoyed me about it. It's like, could you just do all of it or none of it? It's really strange.
Yeah, I can understand, like, the games where, like, when the character starts speaking, they'll do, like, a huh? Or whatever, to just, like, indicate the mood that it's setting or something.
Right.
But, yeah, that's a bit weird.
Even more weird is occasionally the lines they say don't exactly match the text, but mostly.
Oh,
classic.
Is there this commander on the ship? So they're like, oh, hello, commander. This, this, and that. But, like, 80% of it's the same, but 20% isn't. So then you're even more confused. Then they stop talking. Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
You know? Because it's like if you're trying to follow along, like reading a subtitle, you're reading and hearing two different things. So it happens throughout the entire game, like commonly. So it's like very dissonant experience. But you know,
right?
Yeah, some janky stuff like that is always funny. But yeah, that's pretty cool. The accessibility thing. Mm-hmm. We're probably not going for too much longer. I guess I did want to quickly chat about expansion pack stuff. It could be a main topic. But I was just thinking briefly how, in my experience just my own personal gaming experience, some expansion or DLC content, whatever you want to call it these days, has either vastly improved the game or in some cases vastly, like, made it way worse, which I always find curious. Like, the developers started, and I'm going to start on the negative side first. The developers had a great idea. They launched the game's solid enough, or maybe it's even good. And then they have more ideas. So the first game, I'm going to use that as an example, which is a Mac game as well, is Phoenix Point, aka it's like an XCOM spinoff, the newer XCOMs. And it's it's a pretty solid game. It has a lot of cool stuff that XCOM doesn't, which makes me like it better, but then it's also kind of janky in other ways. So it's, you know, it's ultimately probably like a 7 out of 10 game or something instead of XCOM, you know, it would rate a lot higher. I'm referring to the newer XCOMs made by Firaxis, not the way old ones. But then it had a pretty good following. It was a Kickstarter game. And then they started making DLC for it. And everyone, of course, is excited. More content, right? Who doesn't like content for a game they like?
Right.
But the DLCs were terrible. They made the game, like, harder and weird and sloggy. And it went from being, like, fun to grindy to, like, wild difficulty spikes all over the place and just get your face kicked in. And the problem is, if I recall, once you bought and installed the DLC, it was, like, irreversible. So it was, like, in your game. And you were just stuck with it. And each one, they released 5 DLC packs, and I think only one of them is well received. The other 4 are like mostly negative on Steam. And reading about it, and I haven't tried a few myself, I'm like, what are they doing with their game? The game was good, and you're just ruining it with everything you have.
Wow. Yeah.
It happens in more ways than one, right? Because there's also games that don't necessarily get DLC like as a separate release, but they get patches.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a major patch that adds something, which could arguably call it DLC. And maybe they start messing with the balance of the game. Like this Chaos Gate game I just mentioned with the weird voice acting thing. They did the same thing where the game was very well received. Then they started messing with the balance of the game, like in really strange ways. And everyone went like, what the heck? You're screwing with our game. And of course, it's a single player game. So like, are you really, really worried about balance? Compared to obviously a co-op or multiplayer game where that's more relevant. And also they released a weird DLC that was also like, of course it also had a bit of false advertising, which was more the controversy there. But yeah, I just found it strange that some developers start great and then go downhill. Other developers start terrible, then go uphill. Say No Man's Sky or something.
Oh yeah, No Man's Sky, right. Good example.
You know, which I never got into, but I followed that whole narrative closely. Or arguably something like Cyberpunk, which was still a good game, but very much not as advertised. It was an okay game at launch, but not at all what was advertised. But years later, and basically late last year, through lots of patches and a very good expansion release, the game's like phenomenal now. Even if you don't like the genre, it's like they basically realized the vision they claimed they would present. It just took them like 3 to 4 years to do it.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I find it interesting I guess you could just say, oh, well, that's life or the human experience. People go up and down, blah, blah, blah. But specifically as an entertainment medium, and I do find it the most interesting when people start in a good place and go downhill. It's like, how does that happen? I understand starting in a bad place and going uphill. because that's like how it should work if you are going to go to a better anyway.
Right. I mean, I don't really play MMOs, but I could imagine this happens a lot with updates and expansions to MMOs you know, the player base gets shifted around and the balancing and all that, right?
There's a lot of that. I mean, every time there's an expansion, you know, you're wondering what they're going to do and is to be, you know, good or bad or, you know, and sometimes they'll come up with something. I know, for instance, New World, their expansions have been pretty good, but buggy, which is, so you play the game, everything works great, you know, no problems. They come up with this, oh, this new thing, adding to it, all these new features and things to do, and all of a sudden, everything falls flat on its face, and you can't do things all of a sudden because the, you know, whatever, it, all the DLC altered the code just enough to make it clunky all of a sudden. Yeah. And then you got to go through updates and updates and updates, and eventually they get it right, but, you know, that's a good example of it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I also feel like, you know, there's more risk of the expansion packs and DLCs messing things up when it's multiplayer, because you are in a situation where, you know, you can wind up splitting the player base between the people who have the DLCs and the people who don't, and matchmaking or whatever might get harder. Finding people who have the same content can play with you. You wind up in situations where, like, some people have one experience, other people have another experience, and the whole community might diverge and all that, right? And then you have like games like Civilization, where the expansion pack might introduce a lot of new mechanics that get integrated into the flow of the game. And if you don't like those mechanics, then, you know, you're stuck with needing to deal with them now being integrated in every part of the game.
Right, right.
Which, you know, can be fantastic when it's something that you enjoy and it enhances the entire campaign. But on the flip side, yeah, if you're not really into religious victories in Civilization, you always want to go for a different kind of thing, and then all of a sudden with this new expansion pack that focuses entirely on that victory path, then there's a lot more you need to deal with on that side or whatever, right?
That's a good point. The expansions or updates that, let's call it, hard code new features into the game rather than like it was very standard in the old days, let's say, with like an old example like Warcraft 3. They released the Frozen Throne. It was an expansion pack, and it's a separate game. You have to have the base game, but it's a different launcher, and it loads a different version of the game that's its own instance, if you will, in like MMO terms, and you play it. It's just, it's over there. If you don't like it, you just go over here and play the regular one.
Right.
Now, that happens to be one of my, A, favorite games of all time, and B, one of my favorite expansions of all time. I think it's like peak content, the Frozen Throne, if you happen to enjoy Warcraft. But other games that I have enjoyed, at least, that hard-code new features, like XCOM 1 and 2, all the expansions basically just merged all kinds of new stuff.
Well, you say that. XCOM actually did exactly what you're saying before. When you launch XCOM, it'll ask you, do you want to launch with War of the Chosen or just the base game? Or do you want to launch with Enemy Within or just Enemy Unknown?
It did. I don't know if XCOM 1 did that, but XCOM 2 did, at least.
XCOM 1 did it as well. But you're right that if you then do launch it with the expansion, it is integrated into the campaign that already existed, but you can launch it without.
Right. Yeah, I think they took... I mean, that's also one of my favorite games ever, both 1 and 2, and all the... I think with all the expansions, they're both like peak content, gaming content. Really, really good job. But yeah, they take care, in fact, like similar to this accessibility discussion... They're like, hey, do you want to play with this or not? And you can turn which ones on or off. I think you can even customize some of them. Like, how much of it do you want? And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, this is how you do it.
Yeah, XCOM 2 did a lovely thing where when you start a campaign with the War of the Chosen launcher, you can choose whether you, like, if you have the... So they made, like, a really big expansion pack called War of the Chosen. Then they also had two smaller expansion packs, and they didn't get separate launchers. They just got merged into the game. But when you... At least with the War of the Chosen launcher, might not work with the original launcher. You can choose if you want the content from those two minor expansion packs integrated into the War of the Chosen campaign, or if you want them to just have all the gear that they brought into the game in the game, but not as part of the narrative, but just, like, it's just in there. It's a super cool way of, like... still giving you the content of the DLC as part of your experience, but letting you choose how you want it to flow.
That's nice.
Yeah, very, very clever. Very clever. Yeah, so huge fan of that. I'm annoyed they went and made Marvel superhero weird card game nonsense. I thought it was honestly one of the worst games I've ever tried. I'm like, could you just make XCOM 3, please? Like, everyone in the world wants you to. Come on.
Yeah.
My little rant there. Marvel Midnight Suns or something. Oh, my God.
I have no idea.
I'm not going to rant about that game. I didn't like it. It didn't sell well. It commercially failed. I don't want people to fail normally, but in this case, I'm like, just move on, please. Hope you learned your lesson. I get it. People want to try new stuff and be creative or whatever. I'm not the creator, so I can't really comment on that creative drive. For or against it, obviously, but you know, just listen to the fans. Just make XCOM 3. Thank you very much. And Feral, please port it to Mac. Thank you.
Right.
Yes, please.
Yeah, but that's about everything today. A little chit chat about this and that, upcoming stuff. We'll be back probably next month with some more chatter, or some maybe some more pre WWDC chatter, because the following month
we might know more. But
maybe in another month or so. But thank you guys for being here. It's a fun chat, and thank you everyone for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Yep. Bye bye all.
Bye.